Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
For me personally, I think I can get caught up in a lot of analysis paralysis around, is this the right thing to innovate on, or is this the thing that's going to work? What I've realized through my startups, through working projects, through building things, is that you don't really know until you do it, until you get out there and do it. And nowadays, there's so many resources at your fingertips with the internet. I mean, we're recording a podcast across the world right now, through a web browser, and that's amazing. There's so much out there that you can just take advantage of, and so there's very little risk in trying. And if you fail, you're going to learn something that's going to help the next thing you do. So, to be innovative, I'd say just do it. Just go do it.
Welcome back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. Now, if you haven't yet listened to my recent conversations with Sam Keck of Common Folk Coffee and with George Bryant, our very special episode 300, George from GB Masterminds and the Lighthouse Method, then do check them out after you've listened to this episode. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Noah Labhart. He's the co-founder and chief technology officer of Variable and host of the Code Story podcast. Variable is the on-demand labor marketplace for manufacturing, logistics, and warehousing that allows businesses and workers to connect directly. Businesses can gain flexible capacity and quality workers, while operators get daily pay, flexible work arrangements, and diverse work opportunities. It is a radically different business model that's particularly valuable right now in this time of the COVID pandemic. In our discussion, Noah talked to me about how to have your team own and run your projects. We talked about getting in touch with who you are, then owning it and rocking it, as Noah calls it, and how to get new ideas and solve problems by walking away from them for a little while. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Noah Labhart. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome today to the InnovaBuzz podcast, all the way from Fort Worth in Texas, USA, Noah Labhart, who is the host of the Code Story podcast and also co-founder and chief technology officer of Variable. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Noah. It's a privilege to have you as my guest.
It's an honor to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, you've been involved in startups for a long time, and you're also helping businesses to grow in a unique way, and obviously a podcast host as well. But before we talk about all those things, give us a bit of a whistle-stop tour of your background and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. So I am a native Texan. I've lived in Texas my whole life. Grew up in a small town called Joshua, went to college at Texas A&M University, and graduated with a computer science and mathematics degree. Jumped out, did some work in the corporate world, and just didn't get the itch scratched that I wanted. Worked in the corporate world for 8 years and was taken care of, worked for some great people, learned a lot. you know, was very well taken care of, but I just had the entrepreneurial itch and I had to end up jumping off the corporate world into my own thing. Started a mobile development agency. So started to build mobile apps on my own. Built that up for a couple of years. And then after I did that for a while, I met my current co-founder of Variable, Mike Kinder, and he pitched the idea for Variable to me. And I couldn't shoot holes in it. Built a lot of startups, built a lot of startup solutions, partnered with a lot of startups, and couldn't shoot holes in the idea. So we decided to set out in May of 2016 to build Variable. Fast forward a couple of years, and Variable's doing well. I also started a podcast called Code Story, as you mentioned. So I interview tech leaders and CTOs, kind of like myself, of about their technical and human journeys building, you know, something from nothing, essentially taking an idea from the back of a napkin to a fully fledged launch MVP to maturing a industry disrupting product. So do that now. I am a husband. I've been married for 11 years. I have three kids, 8, 6, and 4 next month. So full house, busy house, especially during pandemic times with homeschool and working from home. That's has some really beautiful moments there. I'm also a man of faith, a longtime Christian, and faith is central to my life, and also an outdoorsman. I like to go hunt and fish and be outdoors and work in the yard and things. So that's I don't know if that's quite whistle stop, but there's a bit of a tour.
Gives us a pretty good idea of what you've done and who you are as a person as well. So I love it. Now you touched on the COVID situation, and we're all in lockdown in various forms. And I know that with Variable, you've built it up to be a remote team from day one. Now, in the current lockdown situation, all of a sudden everybody is an expert in remote working, and I seem to get these emails daily about, you know, tips to improve your remote work. And I have to laugh because I've been doing it for as long as I can remember. So what lessons have you learned in remote working, in particular in having built up Variable on that model right from the beginning? And first of all, I guess, why did you choose that model?
Well, it's interesting. So I built up TouchTap, so my mobile agency, on a fully remote model, but Variable actually is not. Variable team is an in-office team. But I built TouchTap, which is no longer running, but TouchTap, my mobile development agency, was all fully remote. So I had engineers across the country, and across the world really that I worked with. And what I learned then and what I'm relearning now is the importance of making sure that the teams stay connected, making sure that there's still touch points where people can talk to other people, that people are connecting with what they're working on, not only what they're working on, but connecting with what they're working on to other people. Over-communication is incredibly important. Mm-hmm. Slack, email, phone, virtual video chat, things like that. Making sure that everybody is always aligned. And then also, and maybe this is unique to the current pandemic, but making sure that everyone's taking care of themselves. So you can sit inside and work remote and stare at a screen all day long, but making sure that the teams are balancing, getting away from the screen, taking walks, going outside, breathing fresh air, seeing that things are still, the grass is still growing and the trees are still blooming and all those sorts of things. So I think those two things, staying connected as a team and staying connected with yourself, are both incredibly important.
Yeah. I like that. That's the staying connected with yourself and taking time away from the screen. That is really important, particularly now where, people feel as though they're not supposed to go out or anything, and which is the case in some locations, but even then it's good to get away from the screen and focus on something else, even if you can just stare out the window and maybe breathe the fresh air on your balcony for a while.
That's right.
Luckily we can go out for one exercise a day. I don't know how they monitor that you've been out already on any given day, but I certainly try to get out at least once every day, to either on a bike ride or a walk. So.
Yeah, good for you. That's so all right, important.
So tell us a little bit more about what you do at Variable then.
Absolutely. So Variable is an on-demand marketplace for manufacturing and supply chain labor. So what does that mean? We are a platform, a technology platform that connects businesses and workers, which we call operators, to discrete work opportunities in the manufacturing and industrial spaces. So we give businesses the ability or enable them to adopt a third labor paradigm. So you have full-time labor, you've got temp staffing, which is really staff augmentation. And then you've got on-demand labor, where you can deal with your weekly ebbs and flows of your demand and bring in people that you need up and down. It allows businesses to capitalize on revenue opportunities, lower their administrative burden of not having to bring on full-time or temp staffing individuals. That allows them to handpick the people that they work with on an on-demand basis. It enables them to achieve flexible capacity, labor capacity specifically. And from the worker side, we enable the workers or operators to put together flexible schedules, work for diverse companies, diverse work opportunities, expand their skills, and something they really love, to get paid daily. So the workers that work on our platform, they work an op, which is a work opportunity for us. They get paid the next day. So if they, when they put together a full-time schedule on our platform, they essentially have a rolling paycheck every day. So at a high level, that's what we're doing. We're enabling flexible capacity.
Okay. So operators that are looking for work of this kind would register with Variable, and also manufacturers would register with Variable, and then they find one another on the platform.
That's right. Yeah. So operators have a mobile app that they download and they sign up to use. There are a handful of requirements that we require them to do, which they're pretty simple. They add a payment method, so a way that we can pay them once they work. They fill out a tax form because they are 1099 contractors from a U.S. standpoint. And then they do a background check. So we have all three of those things done. Once they're completed and pass the background check, they're ready to start bidding on work opportunities. From a business standpoint, all a business has to do is essentially fill out their metadata, so to speak, you know, their address, their company name, description of what the company is, and then sign up, and they can start posting work. They can start posting work on the platform until they are at the point where they have to accept an operator. They don't even have to put in a payment method. They can just get on the platform, try it out, see what sort of traction they're getting from workers in their area, and then go from there.
And so how do you earn the revenue? Is that from when an operator is hired?
Right. So we charge businesses a premium for based on the transaction. So we scrape a premium off of the transaction. So if we're paying an operator $100, we're going to charge the business $130, and take that 30 off.
Okay. Interesting. And is what I'm curious about, how do you maintain the integrity of the system from the point of view of making sure that, you know, the operators are good operators that you have on there, and also that the businesses are reliable, that they, you know, they treat the operators well?
That's a great question. So it's a two-way rating system. So it's like like most marketplaces you'll see out there, the operators rely heavily on their ratings. And we see it day in and day out. An operator may come in and may not take the platform seriously, although we tell them and tell them twice and tell them three times, make sure to take your rating seriously. If they no show for an op, they're essentially given a 1-star rating automatically, and it's likely they're not going to get work ever again on the platform. But if someone comes in and does a good job and locks in a few 5-star ratings, they're going to continually get work on the platform. Same thing with businesses. So operators can rate businesses on the quality of the work environment, the safety of the work environment, you know, how detailed or how correct the details were for certain work opportunities. so that operators know before they get into a you know, bidding on an opportunity, they know what, how quality a business is to go work for. So it's two ways there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in terms of maintaining the viability and integrity of the platform and your business, that's probably really important that something like that is in place, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's something that we immediately tell our businesses about, that they get to not only pick the operators that have the best ratings, they're able to see them. They can also look at an operator's resume, which is interesting. It's not, that typically isn't done with the temp staffing type of situation. A business can go on our platform and look and see not only their experience on our platform and not only their rating on our platform, but their experience outside the platform too. What industries they've worked in, what businesses they've worked for, if they have any sort of certifications like forklift driving or anything like that, that they've carried over from prior experience. They can see all of that before they choose a specific operator.
Hmm. Okay. So what was some of the challenges that you had to overcome as you launched this and got it to critical mass so that basically it was sustainable for a longer term?
Sure. You know, we had our fair share of challenges. We still face our fair share of challenges every day. but early on, you know, it was interesting. It's kind of a chicken and the egg problem with the marketplace. Right, you got to have enough workers to attract businesses, but you have to have enough businesses to attract workers. So we chose to start with the operator side, the worker side, from a recruiting standpoint, as far as getting operators on the platform and then promising them that they were going to be start seeing businesses in the near term, and that worked out pretty well. When we actually launched in February of 2017, the pilot MVPs, let's call it, of the product, we had 400 to 500 operators in the North Texas area, which is kind of our pilot markets where we're located. And then we had a handful of businesses that were interested in, you know, posting and trying to get some of those workers out to use on our platform. What we didn't anticipate, we really thought it was going to be harder to attract the workforce, the operators, the workers on the platform. To this day, they are actually much, much easier to get on the platform. And easy is relative, but we have had more success in automating that process than the businesses. And what we've realized is that businesses, especially in the manufacturing industrial space, they can be a little rigid, right? Because they don't have a lot of room to be flexible. They are measured down to the operational, you know, I dotted and T cross kind of thing. So when they're wanting to come in or you know, if they're wanting to change something, there has to be a lot of immediate visible value to them. And so what our job has become is essentially to come in and educate them on this third labor paradigm and tell them a new way to achieve flexible capacity, to improve their operation through on-demand labor. Once we have that conversation, it's pretty easy for especially the operations folks to see how this can dramatically change their operation. But it takes a little bit of that first conversation. We didn't expect that.
I guess it raises two questions. The first one is, how did you get out in front of operators first? How did you reach out to them so that you got so many to jump on board early on?
Yeah, it was a fun ride. We, you know, me and my co-founder, my co-founder, some of our early teammates went out and sold the app essentially to all kinds of different personas, we'll say. While me and a few other of the early tech folks were finishing the platform, our early team members, including my partner, went out to say like Amazon warehouses and sat in the parking lot and told people about the platform. or went to, you know, different establishments where people might hang out, like food trucks or bars or things like that, and tried to catch them after work and just, you know, leave them a flyer or tell them to download the app. We also partnered with the Texas Workforce Commission on some of their employment employment events and set up a booth and sat out there and told people about the platform. So in the early days, it was very manual. It was very much getting out in front of people.
Since one-on-one conversations.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And that, the early days, that's how we did it. Nowadays, we've been able to automate it through digital tools like ZipRecruiter and Google Jobs and Snagajob and other sort of job boards where we're able to post job postings for the platform. And then people get on the platform and they're able to see the work from there. And that's actually gone really well.
Yeah. And then with the manufacturers, that was the same kind of thing, except you've scheduled meetings with them, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and that's still an interesting problem that we're getting much more sophisticated in figuring out, but still something that we're working on. Early days, it was emails, it was sending out mail flyers just to try to get people's attention, and we would get a trickle of people coming in that would want to use the platform. Nowadays, we have a much more sophisticated process around HubSpot and CRM and warm leads, email, trickle campaigns, things like that, which work. But even at the same point, it's helpful to create brand awareness. But the real selling point is coming out and saying, hey, I know your operation just as well as you. And I know you're in this industry, so you're probably having problems here, 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 and here. This is where you can use on-demand labor. So it's almost operations consulting with a labor bent. That's where it started to work now.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I love that concept. I mean, it's a fundamental marketing concept, really. Then that's understanding the problem you're solving and knowing who your ideal client is, and that they're having the problem, being able to articulate it back to them in a way that they say, oh, yes, that's exactly one of my issues. And if you've got a solution, well, I'm interested.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And those are fun conversations to have too, because you can almost get a little paternal and say, look, you're doing it wrong. You need to try to do it this way. And what's interesting about operations folks, and that's not the only audience that we talk to, but operations folks tend to be okay with being spoken to like that because they want to get down to the brass tacks of what the problem really is and what value you're bringing. So those are fun to have.
Yeah. All right. Now, you started off in Texas, you mentioned. How broad is your geographic reach now?
So we are, our footprint expands in Texas, Arizona, Arkansas, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee. So we are in the kind of the southern, southeastern, and mid-southern, however you say that, in Texas. I guess Texas is its own thing. Maybe that's because I'm a Texan. but basically the southern and southeastern part of the United States. We do have plans to expand through the United States this year, but the pandemic has put a bit of a stop on that right now.
Yeah, well, that was one of my questions also. So how have things changed for you as a result of the pandemic and all the impact on economies right around the world?
Yeah, it's been interesting. It was a bit scary in the beginning, but the industries that we support that have slowed down have been offset by industries that we support that have sped up based on COVID. Support a number of medical distributors who are sending medical supplies to the front lines, and they're busier than ever. We're fortunate and blessed to have them on the platform, and to be such an established customer because they've been busier than ever and they really picked up a lot during this time. So we've been fortunate to not have to let anybody go. We've maintained our team. We've essentially, we haven't grown obviously like we want to over these past couple of months, but we've been able to maintain, which we've been very, very pleased with and consider ourselves fortunate.
Yeah. And I'm imagining that for those manufacturers that are working in that medical space, that having the ability to quickly bring this sort of operator on board is invaluable to them.
Absolutely. Yeah, it certainly is. And even for the worker themselves too, because they might, you know, they might have been just let go from their full-time role. And this was a secondary gig. Well, now it's their primary gig. And so that, you know, they've got worked, you know, to get them through the next few months or even beyond if they want to keep on the platform. We have such a diverse set of people working on the platform, some full-time manufacturing workers that, you know, pick up shifts here and there to earn extra money. Some people who need fully flexible schedules, other people that just, you know, pick up a shift now and then. And so they can meet the needs of all the manufacturing in, you know, companies and businesses and warehouses and distribution centers that we support.
Hmm. So what other kinds of support do you offer the operators that are on the platform?
So we offer them partnerships. We partner with some companies that provide insurance advice for the gig economy, you know, tax advice for people that are 1099 contractors. We support them through the gamification on the platform, where we create kind of reward systems for them to use the platform. You know, we're sending them out helpful information to help them essentially manage their contract worker type of life, which includes all those things I mentioned. That, you know, the insurance is different, the taxes are different, you know, PPE is different. We even try to make sure they're aware of different opportunities where they can buy PPE and things like that. So that's our main focus with them. We are looking at enhancing some of those things. We're actually pretty regularly looking for ways to partner with other companies who have solved a part of, call it the gig economy. We're sort of in the middle of gig economy versus not. We're not necessarily gig, but we are. And it's kind of a weird middle point we are in.
Sort of the intersection, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. And so we're consistently looking for partners that will help, you know, enhance the lives of our operators, you know, as much as possible. And what's neat is when we look for those partners, we look for ways to just deliver that experience right through our app, because we know that's what they're looking. We know that's what they're going for work. And so we just try to deliver that on a silver platter to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good. And I think it's an important part of the model, isn't it? Because when people, some people may even just go there to get some additional information, and then they see that there is an opportunity to actually get some contract work as well.
Absolutely.
Hmm. All right. Now, I want to switch to the podcast, the Code Story podcast. I'm curious, why did you start that? Did that come about before Variable, or totally independent of Variable, or how are the two connected?
That's a good question. It is independent. A variable. It's kind of my side passion project. So how it came about, I've been listening to podcasts for quite a while. There's actually two reasons it came about. I had been listening to podcasts for quite a while. One of my favorites is How I Built This with Guy Raz. Mm. And I think he does a fantastic job of pulling really interesting parts out of the human stories of individuals who've started companies. And I really liked that. And what that drove me to do was to look for a tech version of that, essentially Guy Raz's tech version of How I Built This. And went out to look for it, and I couldn't find it. I found some people that did a great job, I mean, that made a great podcast, but they weren't narrated like Guy's podcast. They weren't put to music. They weren't really part of an experience, an audio experience. And I really wanted that with tech in it. And maybe that's just because that's me. I'm a bit of an artist myself and a tech guy, which is not normal. I say that there's actually a lot of musicians in tech, but I don't want to digress on that. So artist and tech guy, but I couldn't find that kind of podcast. And I was like, okay, what if I gave it a shot? The second point I was going to mention is through Variable as a CTO, I talked to lots of different CTOs about how they're doing things, how they're building their teams, how they're scaling their technology, how they are designing and architecting, and what sort of, you know, things they went through early on. And I thought, well, I've kind of got the network to do it. Why don't I give it a shot? So I had a buddy of mine, Rylan Barnes, who is a longtime friend of mine, a college roommate. We were in his, we were in each other's weddings and things like that. Longtime friend. And he's also a successful tech entrepreneur. And I said, hey, I'm going to start this podcast. Here's the premise. What do you think? And I don't know if it's because he's my friend or if, you know, if he really liked the idea, but he got excited about it. So I was like, okay, let's do it. You're going to be my first interview. So he came over, we did the first interview, and it took me 6 months to edit it. 6 months to edit it by myself. And finally I just was like, this is never going to get off the ground if I do everything. So I ended up hiring an editor to work with me. His name's George Macharko for season one. Bradley Denham is actually who edits season two and beyond now, but George is my first editor. He did a fantastic job and ended up launching the first episode in June of last year. And I guess we're 30 something episodes now.
Mm. Yeah, well, well done. You've gotten through the pod fade is typically around about 7 or 8 episodes, I think. Is sure. The statistic. Yeah.
Right. I've heard that term.
Yeah. Well, I'm about to start up my second podcast. It actually got stalled at 7, so I thought I'm having pod fade there. I need to get through that. But of course, I'm pleased to say that as we speak, actually, this is going to be episode 301 for the InnovaBuzz podcast. So we're That's well amazing. And truly through pod fade there.
Mm. Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah. All right. And so how did you go about growing the podcast then once you got it up and running and episodes out there?
Sure. That's a great question. You know, and I'm still trying to figure out the formula. And I think, you know, I'm sure you can relate that the formula sort of always evolves and changes how you can get it in front of new audiences. But at first I started out just doing social media and just doing, you know, sharing the podcast through all the distribution channels that I could. And that helped pretty good, but it was a pretty slow growth trickle. And I was like, okay, this is working, but it's not as fast as I want to. And I feel like people are going to like this. I just got to get it in front of people. And then I realized the value of the types of guests that I was bringing on. Really, I was kind of sort of cherry picking the guests that I thought would be interesting, which I still do. I'll be honest. But there were also some opportunities to bring on some guests that were interesting and interesting stories, but had a really big audience too. Hmm. And so that helped a ton to sort of be able to, you know, swap episodes or interview people that had the audience, that had the exposure, that when they liked a tweet, you know, it would get 1,000 views, things like that. So that's sort of how I started to do it from that standpoint. I've done a little bit of advertising through Podcorn, so through other podcasts where I can share my podcast on other people's feeds, and that's been helpful too. But to be honest, I'm still trying to figure it out.
Yeah, well, that's why I asked the question of podcasters. That's what I'm thinking is there something I'm missing? Is there a tip? I mean, I've essentially done a lot of what you mentioned there, and I'm looking. There's a few new platforms around. I don't know if you're familiar with Podchaser. Mm-hmm. That seems to be a rapidly growing podcast directory. They're doing lots of interesting things to sort of help people promote. So there's a few things like that I'm trying out. But like you, I'd really like to see a more rapid growth, but I guess things I'm doing are working, so I'll just keep plugging away at that.
Yeah, that's usually how it works. You just got to plug away.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is fascinating, Noah. I could talk podcasting all day, and your story about variable is really interesting. I mean, there's lots of other questions we could delve into, but I'm just watching the time here. I'm aware of the time. I think it's a good point to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round, and I'm sure there'd be things from your experience out of variable and podcasting and your other startups come up here. It's essentially designed for the listener to get some valuable tips from your experience and hopefully take something away today that'll inspire them to go and do something awesome as a result.
Very cool.
So there's 5 questions. First one is, what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Oh, there's so many things that come to mind, but the number one thing I think to be innovative is to do it. Just to do it. You know, I think that for me personally, I think I can get caught up in a lot of analysis paralysis around, is this the right thing to innovate on, or is this the thing that's going to work? What I've realized through my startups, through, you know, working projects, through building things, is that you don't really know until you do it. You get out there and do it. And nowadays there's so many resources at your fingertips with the internet. I mean, you know, we're recording a podcast across the world right now, through a web browser. And that's amazing. There's so much out there that you can just take advantage of. And so there's very little risk in trying. And if you fail, you're going to learn something that's going to help the next thing you do. So to be innovative, I'd say just do it. Just go do it.
Yeah. That's great advice. I mean, I so often I think of something and I think, or I see something and I have this thought of, oh, I thought of that a while ago, but of course I didn't take action. Somebody else took action and have turned it into an,
so that happened something. You too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So taking action is quite important. And I like that you said, you know, even if you fail, you learn something from it.
Absolutely.
Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
My favorite way to develop new ideas. So I'm a tech guy. I build digital tools. I build software, right? I'm a software architect. My best, most interesting way to generate new ideas in that field is to go do analog things, is to get away from the digital field, the digital world, and go outside. I think there's two things that happens. One, it could be inside, it could be outside. That's not the point. But for me, it's outside. And there's two things that happens. One, when I take my eyes off and my mind off of what I'm trying to innovate on, or, you know, what I'm trying to, where I'm trying to generate new ideas, then I think clearer. And I'm not staring at it the whole time. And then two, just good ideas come from the most random places. You know, I might be getting a beverage at a gas station and be like, oh, I've got this idea for how I can optimize our platform based on how I saw the soda come out of the machine into the cup, you know, and it may not even have anything to do with that metaphor. It just may have to do with that moment where my head was. So get out and do analog stuff. You know, I think that's really important.
Yeah. And I think there's an element of curiosity there, isn't there, over what might seem like banal things, like how the soda comes out of the dispenser. To me, I have this saying that everything is a metaphor. And I think, you know, you observe things that, you know, maybe people take for granted, and look at it and say, well, what can that teach me, or why is that the way it is? And that often brings those sort of thoughts for me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I like that everything is a metaphor.
Yeah. All right. Do you have a favorite resource you use most often?
I'm on Slack 24/7. So I think that's probably my most useful resource. Email, LinkedIn is good. Connecting to new individuals. I think if I had to pick one across everything that I do or have done, it probably would be Slack or my Mac. Those two would be the ones I'd choose.
Yeah. Well, Slack certainly has carved out a niche in the remote working space. And you talked earlier about how important it was to over communicate, and Slack is great for real-time communication and also integrating with a whole lot of other online tools where you can share information.
Absolutely.
Okay, now what's the best way to keep a project on track?
Oh, I like this one. So I'm also a PMP, so I have two answers for this. You know, there's the technical project manager answer of, you know, status reporting, measuring KPIs, Gantts, and all that stuff. And I think all that's good. Make sure you break down break down the project into appropriate chunks, and then lay it out strategically so you can execute on it and measure it. I think all that is good, and I think that is important. And I do that every day. And that'd probably be the first technical answer. The second answer is a little more cultural. How do you keep a project on time and delivered? I think you have to stay connected with your team. I think you have to know the person who's executing on it, coach them, teach them, help them. And if they're enabled, coach them and teach them to coach and enable other people. So it sort of makes an exponential sort of ripple there. But I really think the best way that I've found to keep a project on time is to enable people and stay connected with them.
Yeah, I love that answer, because you've talked about some of the technical stuff, which in the end, that might be the people working on the project that actually do that. So to enable them, and the other bit I really love is enabling them to enable the next level. So basically making yourself redundant as the project manager, but just orchestrating the communications. And then, yeah, you build up this team that's driving the project.
Absolutely. I like how you put that. There's nothing more satisfying than making yourself redundant. I've figured out.
All right. And what's the number one thing you think anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I think be themselves. I think be in touch with who you are, which is a difficult thing to do sometimes. You know, as people, we all have our own histories and experiences and, you know, traumatic events and things that have led to how we operate in the moment. And sometimes that's hard. That makes it hard to be in touch with yourself. But I would say the best way to differentiate yourself is to get in touch with yourself and own who you are, and rock it. I think that is the way I feel like God has intended us to differentiate ourselves.
Yeah, I love that. Own who you are and rock it. And the self-awareness, being in touch with who you are part, that comes back to what you were saying earlier about getting out and getting away and clearing your mind, allowing your mind to wander, and also, you know, the self-care we talked about very early on, getting out into the fresh air and sunshine and enjoying nature. I think all of that plays into this idea of becoming more self-aware.
Absolutely. Agreed.
All right. Well, thanks, Noah. This has been really fabulous. Now, where can people find out more about Variable, find out more about you, find the Code Story podcast, and maybe even get in touch to say thanks for what you shared today?
Absolutely. So you can find me on LinkedIn. That's my most, that's where I'm active on social media professionally. You can check out more about me at noahlabhart.com. If you want to learn more about Variable, you can go to variableops.com, and that's spelled variableops.com. And then as far as the podcast, so the podcast website is codestory.co, and you can also search Code Story on any major podcast directory and find the show there.
Great. And we'll have all those links in the show notes if you happen to be listening in the car right now, so that you can go back home, check out the episode show notes, and just click through to all of those links. So do you have any parting advice you'd like to leave our listener today, Noah?
Oh, I have to prepare something for that. parting advice, you know, I think it goes back to what we were talking about, how do you innovate? I think it applies, what I was saying applies to a lot of different things. Just be bold in yourself and go do it and give things a shot. I think that's really important. If I could give anybody advice that has an idea or is itching to do something, the first thing I'm going to say is, well, go do it.
All right. Well, that's great advice. And hopefully you'll take something out of this, the listener, from Noah's advice today, some actions and some tips that he's given, and actually go out and implement some of that in your business. All right, finally, Noah, who would you like me to chat with on a future InnovaBuzz podcast, and why?
Oh, that's a great question. I think the one that comes to mind for some reason is Cortland Allen. So I follow him pretty regularly. He is a podcast hoster as well. He's the founder of Indie Hackers. He's a tech guy. He's a tech builder, a digital builder. And he's just a really interesting guy and has a lot of interesting stories to tell. And he comes from my world, so maybe that's why I'm the most interested in it. But yeah. I think he would be an interesting interview.
All right. Well, we'll reach out to Cortland, maybe get an introduction from you and have him on the podcast as well.
Absolutely.
So thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today, Noah. I've really enjoyed this. So it's been a fascinating story, how you came up with the idea of Variable and built it to a business, and how you've been able to rapidly pivot in some ways with the current COVID situation. But obviously there's been a demand that has tapped in, but it's based on the relationships you already had in place and had built, which is, I think that's a really important point. I've really enjoyed this immensely. So yeah, all the best, and let's keep in touch.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I've had a blast.
I hope you enjoyed that insightful and informative conversation with Noah and took something away from his episode. The story of how Noah and his partners started Variable as a minimum viable product and steadily grew from there without ever overextending was the highlight for me. I'm curious to know what you took away from Noah's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Noah Labhart. That is NOAHLABHART. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Noah Labhart. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Noah there, as well as links to his website, the Variable website, his social media pages, and the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation. Noah suggested that we have a conversation with Cortland Allen of Indie Hackers on a future InnovaBuzz podcast episode. So, Cortland, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Noah Labhart. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got even more fantastic guests lined up, including referral coach and author of Radical Relevance, Bill Cates, and former lead solo pilot of the Blue Angels, Sloan Fellow at the Stanford School of Business, and developer of the Fearless Success System, John Foley. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.